Can you briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Michael Ponte. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Anthropology and Geography at Colorado State University. My research is in paleoanthropology, and I usually do that in Tanzania at a site called Olduvai Gorge.
And you recently traveled to Olduvai Gorge over the summer for your research. Could you tell me a little bit about your trip and some of the things that you did there?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually brought several other people, researchers with us and students. So this summer we focused on several different projects. My PhD student is working on making a 3D model of the gorge by using drones, and we're going to use that 3D model to better understand where we are finding fossils and artifacts on the landscape. I had a postdoctoral scholar working on understanding bone fragmentation in the fossil record at the sites, so we were 3D scanning a bunch of bone fragments. And my own research was working at a site on a fossil assemblage we excavated in 2019 from Bed 4 site at Olduvai, which dates to around 900,000 years old. So this site's important because there's very few well-preserved assemblages of this age at Olduvai Gorge, and it's a time period where Homo erectus, extinct species of human ancestor, is around. The material is interesting because we're finding a lot of evidence of butchery. So one of the things that I'm interested in is understanding human diet. And to do that, I look at the surfaces of fossils for evidence of cut marks from humans, but also tooth marks from carnivores. So to do that takes a lot of time because each fossil has to be looked at with a magnifying glass. And we've been doing this now for several years, and I hope to complete that analysis soon so we can share it with the public.
Okay, and is that part of your research focus, which looks at the impacts of meat and marrow consumption on human evolution?
Yeah, so one of the things I've been doing over the course of my career is trying to understand how this behavior evolved and changed over time. So I've looked at sites that are associated with earlier species of human ancestors, and then these sites associated with the species Homo erectus. And what we're looking for is if the pattern of those marks on fossils changes through time, and what that can tell us about how much meat or marrow the species were getting access to, and also what was their place in the ecosystems. Were they dominant predators, or were they the prey themselves? So we also, in some cases, look at the human fossils for evidence of what is eating them. So my most recent article that's been published was about a human ancestor that had an actual cut mark on it. So it suggested this individual was potentially consumed by another human ancestor. Maybe cannibalism, but maybe not, because there's multiple human species around at the time. So it's an interesting finding, as we don't normally find cut marks on the bones of human ancestors. It's usually carnivore tooth marks that are more commonly found.
That's interesting. So I also read that you've made important methodological contributions to paleoanthropology by developing a novel method for identifying feeding marks on left fossil fuels by human and carnivores. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for me?
Yeah, so that is something that was made possible because the college and the university invested in technology that allowed me to create 3D models of these marks on bones. So one of the things I wanted to do was take a quantitative approach to identifying these marks. And in the past, a scholar would typically look at the bones and, based on their experience with modern examples of marks, they would say, I think this is a cut mark, I think this is a tooth mark, but we have no way of understanding or knowing how skilled the researcher is. So in this case, I'm training a computer by measuring many examples of modern cut marks and tooth marks, and even marks made by animals stepping on bones, to create a comparative sample that we can then use to identify the marks on the fossils that we don't know what made them for sure. And in this case, we basically put the measurements that we collect from the 3D models and use machine learning algorithms to classify the marks as one type or the other. So this recent example of the cut marks on the human fossils, this was the first time we've applied this in a publication, and it showed that the marks on the fossils were very most likely cut marks for one, but also the model was fairly confident that they were actually cut marks. So we can know how accurate a model is and then how confident it is in any one particular identification. And in this case, there's, you know, the analyst has no control over what the identification is. So it's a computer actually classifying it, not a human.
Okay, that's interesting. And then you've also started studying the origins and evolution of cannibalism amongst our ancestors in Africa and Europe. Can you explain a bit more on that as well?
So the origins of cannibalism, you know, the first cut mark human bone is potentially 2.6 million years old, although that fossil has been debated. Our recent publication of the cut marked human leg bone, and I say human as a human ancestor, that is 1.45 million years old. But after that, you know, evidence for cannibalism, it's not common for one, and to say something was cannibalized based on a single bone is essentially impossible. So what we need is big assemblages of human bones that are together. Usually we're looking for not only cut marks, but that the bones are broken open for marrow, because that indicates consumption, that potentially the bones have burning once we see the appearance of controlled fire. So anything that could indicate that these individuals were being consumed. There could be actually human tooth marks on the bones in some cases. But the challenge is figuring out why or what is going on with these assemblages, because there is always the potential that this was a ritual behavior or some symbolic process for a type of mortuary practice. And, you know, in most cases, evidence for or assemblages of that have been of human bones that have been butchered are inferred to be the result of a ritual process, okay, not the fact that they've been cannibalized. Okay. So, you know, the earliest evidence that we have potentially for cannibalism is 800,000 years old, because we have an assemblage at that time that where they're clearly being consumed. My interests in cannibalism later in time are on Neanderthal assemblages, where we have disagreements about what actually happened. Was it symbolic? Was it just for consumption? Were the individuals starving? And the way we have to figure that out is look at all the contextual information, mm-hmm, but also the bones themselves carefully, like I approach looking at assemblages of animal bones. Okay. And this is something that has not typically been done to these, okay, cannibalized assemblages in the past. So we can look for if the Neanderthals are processing the individuals in the assemblage the same way they're processing the animals. And that is an important criteria for saying this isn't a ritual process or, you know, a symbolic thing. It's they are hungry and eating these individuals for some type of nutritional purpose.
Okay. So what exactly drives your interest in the Neanderthal assemblages?
Well, to be honest, it's my colleague and chair, Micah Glantz, who suggested I do this,
okay,
because she knew there were disagreements over the collection she was interested in, mm-hmm, and she got me interested because by giving me a bunch of papers to read about it and how people were talking about the assemblages before. So I saw an opportunity to lend, you know, my expertise to the situation, and hopefully we can provide stronger evidence for some scenario around what's happened there.
Okay.
I don't want to give away what I'm thinking yet, because
yeah,
we have a lot of discussions about how to interpret the evidence we observe, but
okay,
hopefully we'll publish that soon.
Okay. And based on that, is there like a particular question or puzzle that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big one would be, well, there were three things we went into the analysis with. And this is an assemblage 130,000 years old. It is in Croatia. It is, you know, associated with a warm period of time. So the resources were likely abundant there. And there is over 900 remains of Neanderthals that are intermixed with animal bones. And unfortunately, the collection was excavated over 100 years ago, so the standards were not the same, and there's poor records of for the contextual information of the assemblage. So it limits what we can actually know. But we went in wanting to know, one, are these actually cut marks on these Neanderthal bones or not? Because people in the past have disagreed about that and suggested maybe rocks falling from a cave roof led to the marks on the bones. So we've definitely ruled that out. That's an easy one. Then the question was, what can the patterning of marks on the bones tell us? So not only the cut marks, but the percussion marks that are left behind when you break the bones open for marrow, and also carnivore tooth marks on the bones. Are there any of those? Because depending on which article you read about this site, there are disagreements about it. Some people say that there are absolutely zero percussion marks in the assemblage, and others say there's zero carnivore tooth marks in the assemblage, while some have reported that they're in fact present. So we didn't know what we were going to find, but now we know for sure that there are in fact many percussion marks in the assemblage and also carnivore tooth marks. So what this tells us is there was likely consumption going on of these individuals, and also that they're very unlikely to have been buried. They're broken and fragmented into small pieces, and the fact that carnivores were able to consume them suggests that they were never put in the ground. And this points away from a ritual process potentially, but there's other information we have to look at before we can conclude that.
And so throughout your research, what have been some of your most eye-opening experiences?
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. You know, I would say I've been surprised a lot about how what we observe over time in the fossil record from looking at many fossil assemblages, how Homo erectus appears to have almost immediately from appearing on the landscape at Olduvai Gorge, started to be a more dominant predator and more capable of getting access to animals. The question is whether hunting appeared with Homo erectus or did it occur earlier, and how important was it to the evolution of the species as it's evolved over time? What are the other things that's been very surprising is the origins and evolution of bone tool technology is often associated with modern humans and been argued to be a marker of the evolution of modern humans. But we are finding evidence of bone tool technology that has much greater antiquity and is associated more with Homo erectus. And in 2020, I published a paper on a specimen that was sitting in a lab that I cleared out for my dissertation research in 2007. And in that lab, we found a very weird shaped bone that looked to have barbs on it and to have been intentionally shaped. And after careful study with several other researchers, we concluded that this was a preform of a barbed point, which is a careful wording in that we don't want to call it a bone harpoon because it's not really a fully shaped object, but it pushes back potentially the origin of that technology by about 700,000 years. So it is a huge difference between when we see the next conclusive barbed objects about 90,000 years ago to this one. So it's an exciting discovery, and you know, it's hopefully opens people's eyes to looking for that trace in the record moving forward.
Yeah, sounds good. And then what are some challenging aspects of your research?
You know, it's always challenging to work in another country. In Tanzania, you're required to have many permits. You're often working in harsh environments. It requires a large staff of support, and you know, it's not like you just show up. So there's lots of preparation involved, especially when you're bringing large groups of people. And to be able to do that, we have to rely on not only local people, but all the researchers that are, you know, contributing to the project. So that's challenging. It's also challenging to fund projects like this because it's quite expensive to excavate, you know, at Olduvai Gorge, and the number of people required to make that happen is, of course, going to cost a lot of money. And even just getting to Tanzania can be expensive. So it's always cost, time, and, you know, and the difficulties of working in foreign countries that archaeologists are often struggling with. And it's also dependent on where you're going, but for me, Tanzania, it has been made possible to work there from my colleagues that are from the country, but now here, US-based researchers. I'll give a shout out to Professor Jackson Njau. He's running so many projects at Olduvai Gorge and invests so much time. So without him, none of this research would be happening. And you know, it's nice to show up and he's already set up an entire field camp and secured the permits for everyone. So you know, you have to rely on colleagues like that sometimes to really make the research happen.
Okay. What is some advice that you'd give to graduate students or early career academics as they progress in their careers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I would say, you know, rely on your mentors. Try and learn as much as possible and always work towards improving your skill sets. It's a challenging environment for academics, given the funding available, especially in disciplines like anthropology. So then it's competitive afterwards. So you really just have to try your, like, put your best effort forward and make yourself as competitive as possible. I always argue that if you are committed to succeeding, you have a very good chance of making that happen. You see statistics where there's a high rate of failure of getting a PhD or moving on and getting a job. But, you know, it's the people who do push through and that keep trying and are committed to it that actually become successful. So although it is challenging, it is absolutely possible, and you just have to make it happen.
Okay, sounds good. Do you have any final remarks or comments that you would like to add before we end the interview?
I think we have it covered. So thank you for your time and being interested.
All right. Thank you so much for your time as well.